Perfect Stranglers contains graphic and explicit content suitable for mature listeners. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey, Stranglers, it's Bree.
Hey, guys, it's Kylie.
Welcome to starting an episode.
You did.
And not just, like, staring at you.
Waiting for Kylie to sing. Come on, girl. Yeah, that's true. I liked it. It felt weird. It was strange, but I'll allow it, in the words of Doctor Strange from the new Spider-Man. I always say, it was weird, but I'll allow it. Maybe he says strange. I don't know. I've seen the movie three times. The new Spider-Man.
It would make more sense for him to say strange.
I think he says it was strange, but I'll allow it.
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah. But yeah, I've seen that movie three times, Brie. In theaters, obviously. And it is just as good every single time. I'm not going to give away spoilers. I know once you guys are listening to this, it's been out for like a month. But it is so fucking good. I went the first two times alone because I, you know, love to go to movies alone. And the only person that like wanted to go with me, Nicole would have and then Julia would have. But the times that I was available, like no one else would have been available because they were like during work hours and stuff when I had like a break. Or, you know, it was like around the holidays or whatever. So anyway, yeah, I went a couple times by myself and then Julia asked me once to go. And every single time was just chills. Every time. And then, if you guys don't know, there's two post-credit scenes. So if you're not a Marvel person, you need to stay after the movie ends and watch your post-credit scenes like a good Marvel fan. There's two of them in this movie. And that's my PSA for you.
That's cool. I recently saw the new Kingsman.
Oh, how was that?
And it was good. The thing with the post credits, whatever, reminded me of that. Because after the credits, they had some little, I don't know what you call it, post credit fun.
Ooh, really?
On the Kingsman, yeah. It was pretty interesting. It was like a historical, it like brought in real historical events.
I've heard that that's how those movies are.
Yeah. So, it's pretty cool.
Don't have a brother that works third shift who texts you in the ass crack of the dawn.
Leave it alone.
So it's like after work for him.
Yeah. Can I tell you my pop socket journey for a second?
Yeah.
You know what a pop socket is, right?
Yeah.
Let me tell you my pop socket journey. So I needed to have, not needed, but like, I have to drive like 80 miles a day when I have Everly to school and back, and I don't have like having my phone around willy-nilly. I wanted to have it up on a mount, you know?
Yep.
But I had this thick-ass pop socket. It's one of the ones with like glitter in it.
Yep.
And it's really thick. It's not like, so this is like a normal thickness one.
Right.
There's a huge difference. So to get a thick pop socket on a car mount, because they make some for pop sockets, but they, from what I saw online, they only made them for the ones with a thin pop socket, not the like the extra ones. And so I bought one because the people said that the one for the thin pop socket also worked for the thick boys, and it did not. So I had to return it. So then I went to Target and I got a regular one where it just like squeezes the phone.
Yeah.
And I put on my boring thin pop socket on the back of it and it works. Well, I went to Target maybe the other day and I saw that the pop socket brand now makes car vent like holders for your phone for the thick ass pop sockets.
Oh.
And so now I'm like, I just wasted $20 on the squeezy one and took off my beautiful purple glittery pop socket. And now I'm mad because I didn't even need to do that. I could have just went and got a pop socket brand car holder.
Huh.
Or phone holder for my car.
I didn't know.
I'm really mad about it because I'm like, I just wasted money on this.
Yeah, I hate it when
phone holder. And now I have this non-functioning pop socket that's fucking beautiful and it matches my phone because the sticky stuff doesn't work anymore.
Oh, but is it one of the swappable top ones?
What?
I don't think so.
Because I think it might be because like the new and improved kind are like the swappable top or whatever.
I don't know. I've never thought about that. I'm going to have to explore this later.
Yeah.
I don't think it is, though, like, just right off the bat looking at it, because it looks like it's pretty solidly on.
Well,
I wonder if you can pop off.
I think some of them, like, detach from the the sticky part and the actual part that you pop up separate, not just like the top. Like, you know,
nearly all the tops and nearly all of our pop grips are interchangeable. Now you can swap your top to fit your mood, change your style, and add a function to your get the fuck out. Get the fuck out. Oh my god, I'm gonna have to look at that later. Stop it, Brie. You may have just changed my life, but that still doesn't fix the fact that this pop socket doesn't fit on my new car phone, on my new phone holder, though, because I got the squeezy one. I'd have to pay like the extra $20 to get the one that goes on your vent that's made by pop socket, and then I have that one that I have nothing to do with.
Yeah. It's a whole conundrum.
I was just trying to be safe. I was just trying to be safe, you guys.
Yeah.
And that's what this is where it gets me.
Yeah.
If I were smart, I would have been like, oh, pop socket. I wonder if they make things for your fucking car. But nope. I'm not smart, as we've learned. All right. Should we get into this?
Let's get it popping.
Let's get it popping. Yeah, I like. Do you want to do housekeeping?
Yeah. Okay, so Stranglers, hey, don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts. And also, you can do that now on Spotify. Is that correct? You can rate on Spotify?
Yeah, you can rate us on Spotify. I know a lot of you have done that, so thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Also, don't forget to subscribe, or not, well, I guess, subscribe or like us on social media. We've got Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and we also want to hear your stories of true weird things that have happened to you, so please email us. Our email is contact@perfectstranglers.com, and also please check out our website, and also please like star rating us, and
sorry, I'm looking at our ratings. I'm trying to find our ratings now. Please. We have all 5 stars on Spotify.
Oh, that's awesome.
Just
need
to update you.
That's cool.
So good job. Keep doing that.
And you know what else we want? We want you to review us too, as well as rate us. Because both are important and both will help us get seen and help other people, other fans of true crime to find us. So that would be lovely.
Right, exactly. And we have great ratings on What's It's Nuts. Except for, maybe we didn't tell you guys about this. There is a guy named Steve Stryker 66666 on Apple Podcasts who rated us 1 star, and he says, and I quote, "Nobody likes joking around in true crime podcasts!" Exclamation point. Did I tell you about that?
You didn't tell me about that. Also, where has this guy been? Because, you know,
I don't know. Why did have you? Our name is Perfect Stranglers. Our name is literally a pun.
Yeah,
like it's a pun.
Also,
did you not get the memo?
Has he not heard of like one of the most famous podcasts ever, which is a true crime comedy podcast, which is My Favorite Murder?
Exactly. I want to be able to click. I wish you could click on people and like see what else
Hang
they
on.
Rate, because I feel like he might be just a troll. But also, like, thank you for the listen. We appreciate it.
Well, also, like, maybe that was the same person who like lashed out at us because we said disparaging remarks about Tim Allen.
That was one of my favorite emails we've ever gotten.
Okay.
We threw shade at Tim Allen. I think it was a woman that did not like it.
Probably. Tim Allen walked into an airport with a pound of cocaine in the 70s, got caught, ratted everyone out, and then that's where his mugshot came from. And we're defending that guy? Okay.
Yeah, I guess that's the vibe.
Yeah.
People who defend Tim Allen.
Right, he's also very misogynistic, so there's that.
Yes, and like a really big Trump supporter.
Oh yeah.
So.
I'm just gonna go ahead and assume that the person who was mad at us about Tim Allen was probably a Trump supporter.
They said, this human being said, I wanted to follow in like your podcast, but when you started talking about Tim Allen and his conservative views and his past, 4 exclamation points, I'm out. I don't need to know your personal feelings. Just keep it professional and on the subject, ! To which we replied, hello, name. I'm sorry you feel that way, but that's the beauty of having our own podcast. We can voice our own opinions and nobody is obligated to listen. So, and then there was more about it, but yeah. I love it. I love that we replied kind of salty and petty, but like, well, kind.
That's like going on somebody's personal blog and being like, I don't want to hear your opinions. Like, that's the entire thing. That's the point of it.
Right. Right. Yeah. And, yeah, the rest of our email was, we do this because we enjoy telling stories to each other. So thank you for giving us a shot. We hope you find the podcast you're looking for. Stay spooky, Perfect Stranglers. Wouldn't that be funny if this person was still listening?
You know what? If you're still listening, which I doubt, shoot, welcome. Welcome anyways.
Welcome to Perfect Stranglers. In this podcast, we talk shit about Tim Allen, except for the only exception to the Tim Allen rule is the Santa Claus movie. To me. That's the only exception to me. And I'll tell you why. The elf? The Bernard. The head elf? Bernard? Yeah. I had such a crush on him. And I don't know why.
It's the curls. Probably the curls.
What?
The curly cues?
I don't know. Yeah, the little curly cue in the front. Yeah. I don't know why. He was like a little bit bossy, but sensitive, and I'm like into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Had a big thing for Bernard. yeah. Let's talk about murder here.
Okay.
So I am dedicating this episode to my friend Girl Sam, because of all the times we've talked about pig farms.
Okay.
For obvious reasons.
Is this Girl Sam who I went to school with but have zero recollection of? Mm-hmm. Which I don't mean that to be like a diss or anything. I just like I feel like she was like you guys tell me that I went to school with her, but like she doesn't look familiar at all, which is really weird because our school is small. And like I don't know, maybe she changed a lot or something, but like
she looks exactly like she did in high school. Like I've seen her high school pictures, and her face looks exactly the same. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you, but yes, you did go to high school with her.
I mean, I think, is she younger? She's like a grade younger or something?
No. She is...
Did she just like move there?
Between our ages. No, she's lived there her whole life. She's between our ages.
What the fuck? Oh my god, I'm so sorry, Girl Sam. It's like, you know, like, I know who Peter Van Splunder is from our high school, but not Girl Sam. What the fuck?
I don't know, man.
Okay.
Yeah, I
carry
don't know.
On.
Yeah, girl. Yeah, we have Girl Sam, we have Boy Sam. So back to the podcast. Okay. Dedicated to you, girl, because pig farms. Okay, let's get into this. This is an international case.
Canada?
Yeah, Canada, eh?
Okay, I know. I think I know this story. Go ahead.
Fuck yeah. Fuck yeah, bud. You probably do. fuck yeah, bud. Let's go up north and talk about Canada, eh? So, during the late 1980s, that came way too natural, by the way. But during the late 1980s and 90s in Vancouver, Canada, they experienced a really significant spike in missing women. Most of the missing women were either sex workers, runaways, or suffered from some type of drug addiction or mental health issues. So I'm going to tell you what exactly happened to those ladies, to the majority of those ladies.
Okay.
So Robert William Willie Picton was born on October 24th, 1949. He was the son of Leonard and Louise Picton. Every time I see the name Leonard, I want to say Leonard for some reason. But in my mind, I'm like Leonard without the O.
Like Leotard.
Yes, Leotard. So Willie was the son of Leotard and Louise Picton, a family of pig farmers in Port Coquitlam? 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 Shackleton. Okay, I have to say it twice in this, so I'm sorry. British Columbia, 17 miles east of Vancouver. His older sister, Linda, was sent to live with relatives in Vancouver. Linda, listen, Linda. this is going to be a wild recording, isn't it? I love it. It's 8 a.m. This is 7 for you.
Oh, yeah, it's early.
Yeah, she's an early bird. Yep, I still got my morning voice on. But, okay, reel her in, Kyle. Okay, so his older sister, Linda, was sent to live with relatives in Vancouver. Their parents basically thought that a pig farm was an inappropriate setting to raise a lady, so she got sent away for a while.
Okay. They're not raising her in the barn, like...
Well, you know what? We'll get to that, because they kind of were.
Oh, shit. Okay. Well, maybe it isn't properly.
Oh, shit is also an appropriate response from what I'm going to tell you. It's a lot of shit involved.
Yeah.
So in the 50s, I guess you send ladies away because they can't do the farm work. Robert and his younger brother, David, began working on the pig farm at a really early age. Louise, the mom, was really, really demanding. She prioritized the pigs over everything else.
Jeez, Louise.
The brother's personal hygiene. Oh, yeah. The brother's personal hygiene was a non-issue for her. She's like, you guys can be covered in shit, covered in manure, smell like a pig pen, whatever. Y'all don't get showers. You don't get to do that. You need to go work on the pigs.
Ew.
So, yeah, they were stinky. And she forced them to work really long hours on the farm, raising the livestock and stuff like that, and just taking care of them. She often sent them to school in unwashed, dirty clothes, just reeking of manure. And the brothers actually got the nickname Stinky Piggy from their classmates. His mom also refused to let them shower. They only could bathe. And I imagine in the 50s in Canada, especially in rural Canada, it was cold water and y'all take a bath in the same bath water. You know, that's what I'm picturing. And I feel like I'm not too far off. And since they were not allowed to shower, they could only bathe. Into adulthood, Picton had a really visceral fear of showers. He would not shower. I don't know if that means he fully would not clean himself. I just know that he would not actually take a full-on shower. Picton was very strongly attached to his mom. He had very, very little interaction with his father, who was very abusive. Because of this, his mother had a really big influence on him, and not necessarily in a positive way, and he honestly reminds me of Ed Kemper and Ed Gein, where they had really bad mommy issues. The mom was really domineering and a huge influence, but also, like, emotionally and mentally manipulative and abusive. So it skewed his idea of what a woman, how you should treat a woman and how a woman should be treating you. So there's a story to like kind of paint the picture of what a bitch his mom was. I almost said a different word that starts with a C, but I held back. It's 8 a.m. and I'm popping on all cylinders, guys. But there's a story about his mom and his brother, David. Basically, David was learning to drive and he hit a kid down the road. He hit a kid and David went back to the house to tell the mom, Louise. When Louise went back and saw the kid kind of like in pain, crumpled up on the side of the road, pretty badly injured, the mom just shoved the kid into the ditch that was like full of swampy waters and just walked away. So David freaked the fuck out, as he should. He went to the mechanic to get the dent out and paint it over. He didn't know what to do about his mom and, like, should he contact the police? Should he not? Because it's his mom and this is, like, farming country and he's not very intelligent.
Yeah, so they just hit and run.
So he's like, I don't know what to do. Hit and run, yeah, and push the kid into the swampy waters that are on the side of the road.
Dang, that poor kid.
Likely full of pig shit. So the police did end up finding out that this kid was something happened to this kid because the parents of the then missing child found the body and David was blamed for it. So an autopsy showed that the cause of death was drowning, not the injuries he suffered when he was, hit by the truck. Although the injuries were significant.
That's terrible.
He suffered a fractured skull with a subcranial hemorrhage and a fractured dislocated pelvis. But the pathologist who did the autopsy said that those injuries would not have killed him. The drowning did. However, that happened, and a trial ensued on who exactly to blame. So in March of 68, they had a jury. They called it a coroner's jury. I don't know if that's a 50s thing or a Canada thing or both. Mm-hmm. But the coroner's jury listened to the evidence of several people, including neighbors, the mechanic who fixed the truck, the police officer who investigated the case. And the verdict was that it was an accidental death per the coroner's report. But at the same time, the coroner informed the 5-man jury a criminal investigation was underway. So that investigation was into David and his actions that night, since he was the one who hit the kid. He did not get off scot-free, although it was officially filed as an accidental death. He was sent to juvenile court, and Louise was never charged for anything. I believe she was suspected because David talked, but I don't think Louise actually, like, was ever fully believed to be the person who did this thing.
Wow.
So she just killed a kid and didn't even think twice about it.
Yeah. Holy shit.
Yeah. I believe, like I said, that although Picton's father was abusive, the actions such as this one from his mother had a big impact on who he actually was as a person, especially into adulthood. So at first, a lot of people thought that the dad, in his abusiveness towards everyone in the family and the mom, that's why he was so fucked up. But as people who have known Picton have come out, because what we're going to talk about, the trial took place in the early 2000s. Oh. So it's fairly modern for what we usually talk about.
Yeah.
And a lot of people think that it was the dad, but as people who have known him and worked on the farm and stuff come out, they're like, no, actually, like, his mom was this way. So I think his mom had a bigger influence on his adulthood.
Mm-hmm.
In school, Picton was in special education classes. He ended up quitting school altogether due to being bullied, getting frustrated with learning in general, and he was being pressured to be on the farm working rather than be in school. When he was in his early teens, he used his savings to buy a calf, which became his pet, his buddy. It was like his only real friend that he ever actually had. And his parents said, yeah, you can keep this calf. Like, it was just born. Go ahead, keep it. It's yours. Well, one day after not being able to find it after school, he was told by his mother to go check the barn. And that's where he found his only friend, his pet calf, slaughtered.
Oh my God.
So they let the calf raise big enough to basically be useful for meat and then slaughtered the calf. So he basically saw his best friend get killed.
Aww. Well,
is really sad.
Okay, so farm kids like that happens on farms, but if you were led to believe that this is going to be your pet that you keep for its lifetime, not that it was going to be used later as food, that's different.
That's very different, yep. So Picton was a really withdrawn person, and that ran into his childhood as well. As a child, he would often get really overwhelmed or just need to be alone, likely to escape the hell that he was living in. There are quite a few stories told about how he would cope, ranging from like simple coping mechanisms, such as telling a traumatic story over and over again and like over-explain himself almost.
Yeah.
He would do this to people about how his calf got slaughtered. So that traumatic instance was really, really traumatic for him, and he would tell that story over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
But there was also another thing he used to do that was troubling, would be a gross understatement. When Picton wanted to hide from someone, he would crawl into the gutted carcasses of large hogs.
Well, that is a good hiding spot.
It's a good hiding spot. Yeah. You know what it reminds me of? Have you ever seen the movie with Leonardo DiCaprio where he fights the bear? What's it called? Starts with R. I want to say Remembrance. That's not it.
No.
I think he hides in a horse carcass for warmth.
Oh. I thought you were going to say...
You know what I'm talking about?
Nope. Because I thought you were going to say you were thinking of the movie with Tom Green called Freddy Got Fingered, and he, like, guts... He guts, like, a deer, and then he, like... It's a very weird movie. Like, honestly, I probably wouldn't recommend it. There are funny parts.
It's called The Revenant.
Oh, okay, no. I don't know. When is that even from?
The Revenant? That was a huge, huge movie that came out in... what year did it come out? 2015, Tom Hardy, Leonardo DiCaprio. And I don't know if it's a true story or not, but the main thing about it is he fought a bear.
It was like one of his best
performances. Okay, Leonardo DiCaprio slept in animal carcasses prepping for this role. Fucking stop! Did my computer hear me? That's the first thing that comes up. According to The Independent, DiCaprio goes to extreme lengths to provide viewers an exceptional performance. He slept inside dead animal carcasses for his role in The Revenant.
Oh my god.
It's an okay movie. It's based on a true story. So yeah, in the movie, he fights a bear, and then he sleeps inside a horse carcass, if I remember correctly. Mm-mm. He grimes up really good in it.
Yeah.
That in the beginning, and then he gets, like, not great.
Traumatizing in some way.
He's very fucked up. He has to be very fucked up. Tom Hardy's in it, and if y'all... Tom Hardy is...
From Venom, right?
He's a fine as fuck man. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Julia has the biggest thing. So her Tom Hardy is my Henry Cavill.
Uh-huh.
Like, I would do anything for Henry Cavill.
Yeah.
Hers is Tom Hardy, but Tom Hardy's still fine as fuck.
Yeah. And you've seen, we may have talked about this before, but his, like, MySpace pictures.
Yes. Yes.
They're cringe.
Yes, we have. Tom Hardy MySpace.
They're really
cringe. If y'all haven't seen Tom Hardy's MySpace pictures, like, they are super cringy. They're the typical, like, douchebag bro MySpace pictures that you would see. You know, the top shot where they're showing, like, their dick root, basically. If y'all don't know what a dick root is, not safe for work, but you can Google it. But yeah. Wow, that brings me back. Okay, should we get back to murder?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We were okay. In Canada.
Okay. Yeah, we were in Canada. Home of the dick root.
Let's get back okay. there.
So let's get back to Canada, eh? So he would hide inside animal carcasses. Picked and dropped out of school in 63. He was 14 years old. When he did that, he got a position as a butcher's apprentice. In 1970, he left that apprenticeship to work full-time at the family farm. His dad died 8 years later in 1978, and his mom died the following year, leaving the farm to Picton and his two siblings. So Linda was allowed back on the farm.
Okay.
Linda and David didn't want the farm. David took over the house, and Picton began running the actual farm operations on his own while living in a very remote area of the property in a trailer. Not much else is really known about his early life from, like, birth to his, like, the 70s, but overall he was quiet, odd, kept to himself, just like that weird guy who stinks, who you think probably could be a murderer, but you don't really have anything to go off of besides what he looks and smells like. Yeah. And like, acts like.
And your own intuition.
Yes, that's Robert Picton.
Yeah.
If you Google pictures of him, you're like, yep, that's a murderer. So when we look at the farm, worker Bill Hiscox, he called the farm a creepy looking place and described Picton as a pretty quiet guy whose occasional bizarre behavior would draw attention to him. His bizarre behavior was nothing new throughout his entire life. He was, quote, unsettling to people. So he's always been quite off.
Yeah.
From a very young age. He had a very off-putting sense of humor. You could tell he had very little interaction with the outside world. He spent most of his life in isolation. He never had any romantic relationships. And women would also often say he had a very creepy demeanor. So, just, you know, a serial killer in the making, really. That's, like, perfect storm. Don't know if he had any frontal lobe injuries, but I feel like the mommy issues in isolation and sleeping in carcasses really was...
That's enough.
Serial killer. Yeah. Yeah, yep. So as the farm was being ran by the Picton brothers after their parents' death, they began to neglect the business and the farming grounds. They ended up using the farming grounds as an event space. They registered it as a nonprofit charity called the Piggy Palace Good Times Society with the Canadian government in 1996.
Okay, like that doesn't sound creepy as hell.
I know. In 1996, they did it, claiming to, quote, organize, coordinate, manage, and operate special events, functions, dances, shows, and exhibitions on behalf of service organizations, sports organizations, and other worthy groups. Its events actually included raves, wild parties featuring Vancouver sex workers, and gatherings in a converted slaughterhouse on the farm at 953 Dominion Avenue in Port Coquitlam? Coquitlam? I don't know. Coquitlam. Okay. I don't know how to say it. But yeah, basically, they created this organization, and really they just used it to have orgies. Huge orgies with sex workers and raves and just drug addicts, heroin addicts, all of the people that are kind of in society who you're like, you actually really need help.
Yeah.
Instead they would have huge parties there.
Yeah, on the pig farm.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Pig farms are very stinky.
They're awful. Oh, can I tell you, Mike, my association with pig farms? Okay. We're just going to go off in tangents today. So when I was younger, I don't know if it was a field trip or what it was, but I was with my mom's friend. It was a guy and he had a son. I forget what his name was. Anyway, we went to a pig farm and then I think we had to have been on a field trip or something. I don't know why this guy was here, but this is what I remember. I don't know. Anyway, there's a pig farm and I distinctly remember the smell of it. After the pig farm, we went to Hardee's. Do you remember the Hardee's that was in Onalaska?
Yeah. It's a Mexican place.
Okay,
now.
So then we went to that Hardee's and I think his son got a mushroom Swiss burger, and the smell of the mushroom Swiss burger from Hardee's reminded me of the pig farm. I can smell that smell to this day. So anytime I smell mushroom Swiss burgers, I smell a pig farm.
Yeah. Gross.
Yeah. Just like a weird association, but I remember that so fucking vividly.
Ew.
Anyway, so these events attracted as many as 2,000 people at a time. So there was a lot of people on these pig farms. Also, members of the Hell's Angels were also frequent on the farm
mm-hmm.
for these parties. So it's just a lot. It was a lot of bad going on.
Yeah.
So
okay, I just hope that none of the pigs were interfered with these parties.
Are you thinking in the way that I'm thinking?
Any way at all. Just okay. Leave the damn pigs alone. There.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I agree with that. So like I started off with, during the late 80s and 90s, there was a spike in missing women. It was well known within the sex worker community in the late 80s and 90s, early 90s, that there was an active serial killer long before any investigations were taking place. The women would try and protect themselves by walking in groups, trying to use a buddy system the best they could. If an unfamiliar client wanted to pick up a girl, the other one would write down the license plate number. This was before cell phones, tracking, like you couldn't share your location with another friend, mm-hmm. you know, that type of thing. But despite the best efforts of trying to be safe during this, the number of missing person files they just kept stacking up. But the investigators were like, yeah, I don't know what's going on. You guys are sex workers and drug addicts. You did it to yourselves. So those in high-risk positions, such as sex workers, runaways with drug addictions, and mental health, were the primary targets of Picton. On March 23rd, 1997, Picton was actually charged with the attempted murder of Wendy Lynn Isetter, who he stabbed several times during an altercation at the farm. Isetter informed police that Picton had handcuffed her, but then she had escaped after suffering several lacerations from him. She told the police that she had disarmed him and stabbed him with his own weapon, and Picton sought treatment at Eagle Ridge Hospital while Isetter recovered at the nearest emergency room. He was released on $2,000 Canadian dollars bond. The charge was dismissed in later January of 98, and the police basically saw her as an incompetent witness because she was a drug addict, and his defense argued that the woman was a hitchhiker who attacked him. So he was released from prison, basically because they believed him that he was using self-defense instead of her with the multiple stab wounds.
Oh, wow.
Yep. I have many things to say about that, but I'll digress. Oops. Oh, shit. My microphone. So months later, the Pictons were sued by the Port Coquitlam. I don't know how to say this. Coquitlam. 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 I don't fucking know. I'm so sorry, Canada. I know there are listeners from Canada. I'm trying. It's like the Oregon-Michigan thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to call you Culquiltum. Officials for violating zoning ordinances, neglecting the agriculture for which it had originally been zoned, and for having, quote, altered a large farm building on the land for the purpose of holding dances, concerts, and other recreations. So the Pictons completely ignored all of the legal pressure, and they held a 1998 New Year's Eve party, after which they were faced with an injunction and banning of all future parties. The police were authorized to arrest and remove any person attending future events at the farm. So at this point, the society that they built, their bogus-ass nonprofit status, was removed the following year in 99 for an inability to produce financial statements, because they're basically using the charity as a tax loophole. Mm-hmm. It was what it was, and to have their sex parties.
Yeah.
So from about 98 and 99, over the course of 3 years, Bill Hissox, the worker on the farm, noticed that women who visited the farm eventually went missing. So from what I gather, Bill came forward, but nothing was investigated. Like, he let authorities know that, hey, something's weird here. People are missing from being on this farm, but like, the police didn't really do anything. But in 2002, another former employee by the name of Scott Chubb came forward. How would you like Chubb to be your last name? Hey, you know the strip club Cruisin' Chubbies in the Dells?
Yeah.
I just thought about that. I haven't thought about that in a while. That used to be like a big deal.
Was it?
Okay, maybe I remember this. I remember when I was like 18, 19, 20, 21. Ish that age,
like the billboards,
all of the billboards and people that we would go to high school with would brag about going to Cruisin' Chubbies.
Oh wow.
Like, think it was like a big deal.
It's not that nice. I went there last year.
No, it's not.
I mean,
I never went to that one.
Not that I have a lot of like strip clubs to compare it to or anything.
yeah,
but I mean,
it's not very nice. The strip clubs in a rural Wisconsin area in general are not nice. Even the Dells is like not nice.
Yeah. Basically, yeah. It looked like the interior is entirely like the ceiling has like wooden planks and stuff. It looks like a hunting lodge kind of a thing, but like with the pole.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah,
that doesn't surprise me at all. Have you ever seen the meme where if there's a strip club in Wisconsin, they should call it Cheese Nips?
They should. Oh man.
Oh, I love it so much.
No, like it seemed clean. Like it looked clean and it smelled like Pine Sol, but like I still didn't want to touch anything.
Understandable.
Yeah. I don't know.
Understandable. Definitely don't eat the food. Definitely don't eat the food.
I wouldn't dream of it. Yuck.
No. But Scott Chubb, so good old Scott Chubb, came forward as an eyewitness who personally saw illegal guns on Picton's farm. Though Picton was being watched by police at this point, they had nothing really on him except for being a fucking creep with a former attempted murder charge and hearsay. However, with Chubb coming forward, this was enough for police to receive a warrant to search the property. So on February 6th of 2002, police officially executed the search warrant for illegal firearms on the property. Robert and David Picton were arrested, and police obtained a second warrant using what they had seen on the property to search the farm as part of the British Columbia Missing Women's Investigation, and it included all of the missing women that were mentioned from the late 80s and early 90s up to, like, current day for them, which was, like, 2002. Personal items belonging to a bunch of missing women were found at the farm, which was sealed off by members of the joint RCMP, which is the Vancouver Police Department Task Force. The following day, Picton was charged with weapons offenses. Both of the Pictons were later released. However, Robert Picton was again kept under police surveillance. On February 22nd, 2002, Robert Picton was arrested again and charged with two counts of first-degree murder for the deaths of Serena Abbotsway and Mona Wilson. On April 2nd, three more charges were added for the murders of Jacqueline McDonnell, Diane Rock, and Heather Bottomley. A sixth charge of murder for Andrea Joseph Berry was put on him on April 9th, followed shortly by a seventh charge for Brenda Wolfe. Then later on, after the April batch of charges, on September 20th, four more charges were added for the murders of Georgina Papin, Patricia Johnson, Helen Hallmark, and Jennifer Firminger. And then four more murder charges for Heather Chinnock, Tanya Holiak, Sherry Irving, and Inga Hall were laid on him on October 3rd, bringing the total first-degree murder charges to 15 at this point.
Wow.
After they looked at all of the evidence they had collected.
Damn, that's a lot of people.
Yep. So this was the largest investigation of any serial killer in Canadian history. On May 26, 2015, 12 more charges were put on Picton. I'm going to say their names because they deserve their names to be said. Cara Ellis, Andrea Borhaven, Deborah Lynn Jones, Marnie Frey, Tiffany Drew, Carrie Koski, Sarah DeVries, Cynthia Felgus, Andrea Jardine, Wendy Crawford, Diana Melanick, and there was a Jane Doe. They never found who exactly that woman was, bringing the total number of first-degree murder charges to 27. Excavations continued at the farm through November of 2003, so a whole year later. The cost of the investigation total estimated to be about $70 million Canadian dollars by the end of 2003. So with inflation and stuff, that's a lot more money nowadays. This farm no longer exists. There's a cement slab over it with a mall sitting on top of it now.
Oh, wow.
And I feel like that mall is probably haunted.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Absolutely haunted. Forensic analysis proved really difficult because the bodies may have been, a lot of the bodies were left to decompose or were eaten by insects and were eaten by pigs on the farm. Not a single complete body was ever found. And since the police never found a complete body of any of the victims, the discovery led investigators to hypothesize that Picton would likely murder his victims, dismember them, shove their severed limbs through his meat grinder before discarding the remains to the pig pens. It's unclear exactly how he went about murdering the victims. He did say some things later on, which we'll get to, but nothing was ever, like, set in stone of how he exactly went along doing this. And it's believed that it was likely sexually motivated and involved some level of torture before or after he murdered these women. During the early days of the excavations, forensic anthropologists brought in heavy equipment, including two 50-foot flat conveyor belts and soil sifters to find traces of human remains. On March 10th, 2004, the government revealed that Picton may have ground up human flesh and meat and mixed it with pork that he sold to the public.
Ew.
The Providence's Health Authority later issued a warning to the public regarding products processed at his facility. It's basically don't eat it. Another claim was made that he fed the bodies directly to the pigs. And if y'all don't know, pigs will eat anything. Like, it's, I don't want to say it's common to, like, give pigs a dead body, but pigs will eat anything. They will eat the bodies and they'll try their best to eat the bones and all of that stuff. So that's why you would do that. That's why a pig farm was a good idea for him for this. If we're talking just strictly murder, the pig farm helped him. Just throwing that out there. So while Picton was put in jail during the trial, he had a cellmate who he got really comfortable with real fucking quick. And like I said, this guy likes to tell his story, his traumatic stories over and over again.
Yeah.
One, because that was a coping mechanism, but two, attention.
Right.
So while in conversation with the cellmate, he would brag about the murders. He referred to himself as a celebrity and was happy to chat about all the cool murdery things he's done in his life. During one of these conversations, he revealed details about keeping victims' belongings, including their driver's license and clothing, on the farm. So these were his prizes.
Yeah.
Basically, souvenirs that he kept. Yep. He also revealed that he wanted to make it an even 50 and only got caught because he was, quote, sloppy, revealing that he had murdered a total of 49 women on the farm. The only problem with his chattiness was that the cellmate was actually an undercover cop.
Oh. Oh, smart.
Uh-huh. So, with that information, officers were able to identify those 27 of the alleged 49 victims. Uh-huh. So that's how we got their names, aside from the Jane Doe. So, Picton's trial began on January 30th, 2006, in New Westminster. Picton pleaded not guilty to 27 charges of first-degree murder in the Supreme Court of British Columbia. The preliminary phase of the trial took most of the year to determine what evidence would actually be admitted before the jury. Reporters were not allowed to disclose any of the materials presented in arguments, and they weren't really even allowed in the courtroom at this point. On March 2nd, one of the 27 counts was rejected by Justice James Williams for lack of evidence. Likely, I'm thinking it was the Jane Doe that was tossed out. On August 9th, Justice Williams split the charges into one group of 6 counts and another group of 20 counts of murder. The trial proceeded on the group of 6 counts to begin with. The remaining 20 counts could have been heard in a separate trial, but ultimately they were stayed on August 4th, so they didn't actually prosecute for the other 20 counts of murder. Because of the publication ban, full details of the decision of why that exactly happened are not publicly available, but the judge did explain that trying all 26 charges at once would have put an unreasonable burden on the jury because the trial would have lasted like up to 2 years at least. It also would have had an increased chance of a mistrial because there would have been so many charges to go through.
Right.
So the judge added that the 6 counts that he chose had materially different evidence from the other 20, and they were more likely to get charges to stick with a smaller group of like solid evidence than the large group. Mm-hmm. So Picton faced first-degree murder charges for the deaths of Frey, Abbotsway, Pappin, Josberry, Wolfe, and Wilson. The media ban was eventually lifted, and for the first time, Canadians got to hear the details of what was found during this super long investigation. They heard of the skulls cut in half with hands and feet stuffed inside. The remains of one victim was stuffed in a garbage bag. Her bloodstained clothes were found in Picton's trailer. Part of another victim's jawbone and teeth were found beside Picton's slaughterhouse. There's a 22 caliber revolver with an attached dildo containing both his and his victim's DNA.
Ew.
In a videotape recording played for the jury, Picton claimed to have attached the dildo to his weapon as a makeshift silencer.
Oh my god, what the hell? Wow. Did it work?
The mental image.
Dang.
Oh my god. So as of February 20th, 2007, the following information was presented to the court. So during Picton's trial, lab staff testified that about 80 unidentified DNA profiles, roughly half male, half female, were found on the evidence, which he was having orgies, so
yeah,
there were definitely men there. The items police found inside Picton's trailer were the dildo revolver, ammunition, night vision goggles, 2 pair of faux fur-lined handcuffs, a syringe with 3 millimeters of blue liquid inside, windshield wiper fluid is what that was.
Oh.
And Spanish fly aphrodisiac. There's actually a product called Spanish fly and it's an aphrodisiac. Yeah. A videotape of Picton's friend Scott Chubb was found. I don't know if this videotape was found or if it was Picton's friends giving video testimonials to police. However, there was a videotape of Mr. Chubb saying Picton had told him a good way to kill a female with a heroin addiction was to inject her with windshield washer fluid, presumably, like I said, taken by police during the investigation. There was a second tape played for Picton during the trial in which an associate named Andrew Bellwood said Picton mentioned killing sex workers by handcuffing and strangling them, then bleeding and gutting them before feeding them to pigs. I believe this Andrew Bellwood was the undercover cop.
Oh, okay.
That was in the cell.
Yeah.
Because he was an associate.
Right.
Photos of the contents of a garbage can found in Picton's slaughterhouse were presented, which were the remains of Mona Wilson. So on December 9th of 2007, the jury returned a verdict that Picton is not guilty on 6 counts of first-degree murder, but is guilty on 6 counts of second-degree murder. So a second-degree murder charge conviction carries the punishment of a life sentence, no possibility of parole for a period of 10 to 25 years, to be set by the trial judge. So on December 11th, 2007, after reading 18 victim impact statements, British Columbia Supreme Court Judge James Williams sentenced Picton to life with the possibility of parole after 25 years, which is the maximum punishment for second-degree murder and also the maximum punishment for first-degree murder.
What?
In Canada at that time.
Huh.
Right? Right. Canada. America isn't great. However, we know how to sentence murderers for the most part. There are some iffy times, but generally, if someone does this, they would be sentenced to life in prison, no possibility of parole or the death penalty, if this were to happen in America. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Those three stupid guys who killed Ahmed Arbery, you know, those guys from the South, whatever, they just got sentenced to life without parole.
Yeah.
Basically, it's a modern-day lynching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
Good. They should be, well, I think others still should happen to them, but anyway. Yeah, they got life without parole. That's how it should be. This guy should have gotten life without the possibility of parole. Or, you know, fed to pigs.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Or, like, just...
That, you know.
Like...
Shot with a dildo gun.
The pigs... The pigs can just, like,
fire squad.
Like, munch on his feet while he's alive.
Exactly. From the bottom up.
Yeah.
And just watch it happen.
Like, yep. hungry hippos.
Yes. Exactly. Exactly. So, for those 6 charges, there were appeals filed by the defense, the Crown, which is, like, government something in Canada. I didn't get into it because it wasn't super relevant to the case. Just that they filed an appeal. The Supreme Court of Canada filed an appeal due to reasons surrounding if he really could have done all of this on his own, because there are so many people at the farm and his brother was there and there was so much DNA evidence. So the main question was, was it just him or did he have an accomplice?
Yes, he did have accomplices. They were pigs.
Exactly. Yes. There were also issues with the jury. One of the jurors said he was not guilty right off the bat. And the judge was like, what grounds do you have to say this on? And she couldn't really state anything. And she was still allowed on the jury.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I don't know. He was still convicted, but ultimately the charges stayed for the 6 murders. After Picton was convicted of the 6 charges of the initial trial, British Columbia Crown prosecutors did keep open of trying the possibility of trying for the 20 charges at a later date. But again, they were tossed aside. The second trial, they set a second trial if further convictions were pushed forth, didn't add anything to Picton's punishment. His punishment would have been the same whether he was charged with 6 counts of murder or 26. So they ended up just not doing anything with that. And he was excused of all of those murders. However, he said he murdered 49 women. So there's that.
Yeah.
So that's the story of Robert Picton, the pig farmer from Canada, eh?
That is not the story I thought it was.
What did you think it was?
I thought that we were talking about the pig farm Canada story with Leonard Lake and Charles Eng.
I don't know of that.
Maybe I'll have to do that one later.
Okay. All right. I didn't know there was a second one.
Well, yeah, there is. I don't know. I guess maybe this happens a lot in Canada.
Canada? I didn't think pig farming was a thing in Canada for some reason. I don't know why. I don't picture farms in Canada, but it makes total sense.
There's a lot of farms in Canada.
There's a lot of farms in Canada.
Yeah.
I don't know why I never pictured that. I went on a date last night. Let me tell you about this, because it was wild, because it kind of has to do with this. So the person I went on a date with is actually from our area, kind of. And we were talking about rural areas, up north, farms, all of that stuff. And I've been up north in, where do I live? Michigan a few times over the summer. I took a solo trip up across Mackinac Bridge into the UP just for like, I literally drove up there and then came back like over a weekend just for like a solo Kylie needs to see trees and nothing else trip. I went alone. I don't think I told anyone that. I probably should have told someone I went up there. I told my therapist and that's it. Anyway, so I went up north. I've been to Traverse City a few times. I've been to Gaylord. And there's money up north in Michigan.
Yeah.
Like, there's money, okay? If you go up north in Wisconsin or Minnesota, the money decreases and the plywood walls increase. Houses decrease. Ice shanties increase.
Yeah.
And it's very weird. It's very weird. I didn't put two and two together until we talked about that last night.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, I, you know what I'm talking about, yeah. Right? Like, when you go up north in Wisconsin, it's true rural.
Yeah.
It is truly, there's nothing, and then there's a creepy house, and then there's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure there's places like that here, but there's resorts and shit up north. Not in Wisconsin.
No.
Wisconsin doesn't really have resorts.
No. There's camping and stuff up north. Yep. The resorts and stuff like that is, like, in, like, Door County and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, by the big lakes, by, like, Lake Michigan and stuff, there's, like, fancy, cool stuff. But, like, where there's just, like, little lakes, like, in the middle of Wisconsin, it's just, like, here's a lake, here's some walleye.
Go fishing. Yep, go fishing. We also talked about how it's so much darker here. Like, it's so much darker here. In the morning, and I kind of, I've felt this, but I have never had anyone to, like, solidify it, because no one from here is from over there. When you're in Wisconsin and Minnesota, like, you have to drive with sunglasses on because the sun is so blaring and it reflects off of the snow.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's really bright. Everything is really bright in Wisconsin, Minnesota all the time in the winter. Like, you have cloudy days, but there are a lot of times I remember driving with sunglasses on because it's so bright, and it's sunny often in Wisconsin and Minnesota in the winter. Here, it is dark so much longer. It's darker here longer in the morning, and it gets darker earlier at night. And I think it's because of the lake. There is constant cloud cover. There is never sun here.
Huh.
It is very dark all the time.
Huh.
There's never sun.
That sounds depressing.
And it's odd. And, like, my mom complains about how gloomy winter is in Wisconsin, and I just want to be like, come here and witness it. And then tell me how you feel, because you got it good. Because there's a lot of sun that happens because of the plains. Like, there's not a lake creating clouds or anything over on the other side of the lake.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just weird. But, yeah, up north, I didn't realize that there was farms in Canada until now.
Yeah.
It didn't connect.
I mean, I'm sure you realized there was farms in Canada. It's just not something you thought about.
I
did, but
I guess I didn't. Yeah, it's not something I thought about, but it makes sense now.
Yeah.
Well, guys, thank you so much. I know there's a lot of tangents in this episode, but we haven't had one of those in a long time where we just kind of get to chit-chat.
No, we haven't.
About stupid shit. No, that was nice. Thank you guys for listening so much. If you guys know of any other pig farm murders, please let us know. DM us on the social medias, Instagram, Facebook, all of the things. Send us an email, because I'm kind of liking these farm... I like farm murders. Yeah. I think they're interesting.
Yeah, or you know what? I bet you there's like farm ghost stories.
Ooh, yeah. Haunted farms, guys.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Send us your farm ghost
Fuck
stories.
Fuck yeah, bud. Yeah, we want to know all of the things. And I think that's all I had to say. Oh yeah. You can also email us contact@perfectstranglers, rate us on Spotify, since that's new. I'm going to say it again, rate us on Spotify, give us that 5-star rating on there, and we will chit chat with you next Thursday.
Bye everyone.